This week, the U.S.-backed campaign against ISIS strongholds in Syria yielded a landmark victory.
After months of fighting, U.S.-backed troops say they've taken control of the Islamic State's capital, Raqqa. We're seeing celebrations in the streets.
While the fighting may be over, aid groups say the area is on the brink of a humanitarian crisis.
As most of the city lies in rubble, thousands of residents are now living in refugee camps outside its borders. For 3 years, the citizens of Raqqa bore the brunt of ISIS terror. But we rarely heard their stories because our journalists couldn't get there. A group of citizen journalists known as Raqqa is being slaughtered silently, risked their lives to break that silence, to show the world how the people of Raqqa were oppressed and murdered under the world's radar. Anonymous members of the group inside the city sacrificed themselves to smuggle photos, videos, and stories to their comrades who had fled to Turkey, Germany, and elsewhere. Matthew Heineman is the director of City of Ghosts, a documentary that tells the story of Raqqa is being slaughtered silently. Abdel Aziz Al-Hamza is co-founder and spokesman for the group, which we will refer to as RBSS. Aziz told us when we spoke to him last summer that it didn't take long for its members to fall under the guns of ISIS.
2 weeks after we started our organization, ISIS announced in the mosques that everyone who's working with RBSS should be executed. A month after we started, they arrested one of our colleagues, and later on he was executed. Thousands of people were arrested because they just put on our Facebook page. Later on, they arrested the father of my colleagues and the co-founder of RBSS, and then they text us either to give the names of three of our colleagues or they will kill the father. And later on, they started to target us in Turkey and even like outside Syria. All of us are threatened wherever we are.
It's kind of astonishing, considering the threat that you were under, Aziz, to let a third party in to film your operations from the inside. Why?
Before meeting Matt, we were not planning to do any movie or any documentary because of security. But later on, we knew like doing this documentary will help us to spread our message out, to reach thousands and millions of people, to educate them about what's going on in Raqqa. So that was like more important than our security.
Matt, you are an able filmmaker and a genius at obtaining access. In your last film, Cartel Land, you somehow managed to get inside of both a drug cartel and an anti-drug cartel organization and a militia group on the U.S. side of the border, all of whom were people who were operating, let's just say, extra-legally. Now you were inside RBSS. You obviously were not in Raqqa. You had to figure out another way to tell the story of what the group's members were doing within.
My idea was that the spine of the film would be this exodus from Syria to Turkey and Turkey ultimately to Europe as members of RBSS were forced to flee. I also knew that, you know, I wanted to show life inside Raqqa. However, you know, I was not able to go to Raqqa. I would be killed instantly. It was a very difficult exercise for me as a filmmaker because all my films have been footage that I've shot. And so here, you know, there's a lot of negotiating on how to get the footage out of Raqqa, obviously using archival footage. We also used some footage from ISIS themselves through various websites that track and monitor terrorist groups like ISIS. And then we also subscribed, if you will, to some ISIS channels on the dark web and other places to receive content that they were disseminating every single day.
And some of the footage is just horrifying. A lot of supposed infidels or traitors being shot to death, just executed summarily in public places by ISIS forces. How do you know when the graphic violence is too much?
It was tough. I didn't want to shy away from the reality of what was happening in Raqqa. I didn't want to shy away from the horrors that the citizens of Raqqa you know, are experiencing every single day. And I think to shy away from it would be doing injustice to their experience. At the same time, we didn't want people to run out of movie theaters or turn off their TVs or however people watch movies these days. And so, you know, it was very much a balancing act in the edit room.
Aziz, at least as horrifying were the images of you and your colleagues in Turkey or in Germany in exile, contemplating what the future holds for you as one after another of your friends is assassinated. We watch you coming to terms with the realization that your chances of surviving in the long term are just not good.
When my colleagues and I started RBSS, we knew that in any second, in any moment, we will be killed. And doing this movie might increase the risk every single second, but it was not our first experience. All of us were arrested by the Syrian regime. All of us used to be activists during the Syrian revolution. Personally, I got arrested 3 times, and I was tortured, and I was lucky to be released. For me personally, I believe that I will be died one day, so I don't care if it's tomorrow, after a week, after a year.
You know, these guys had all been through more than any of us could ever imagine. Arrested and tortured by the Assad regime, arrested and tortured by ISIS, family members, colleagues, friends who were killed by ISIS, many of them being forced to flee, continuing to get death threats. Just unimaginable. To some degree, this film was really about trauma. And so it was key for me to try to scratch beneath the veneer of stoicism to see, you know, what effect this was really having on them. And obviously that final scene in the film is the crescendo of that, where we really see Aziz lay himself bare.
There is one scene in the film which is separate from the rest. It was a rally in Germany of anti-immigrant protesters.
The problem was that I couldn't stay or like keep silent. So I'm the one who used to demonstrate, to protest, to fight against the Syrian regime, against ISIS. So I couldn't just stay home doing nothing. So I decided just to go to the street to demonstrate against them. And then I was able to sit with some of them and have like a conversation. Most of them, they don't know about what's going on in Syria. They are listening to whatever those leaders told them. And their problem is not only about refugees. It's about everyone who's not a real native German, as they said. Those people are like missing educations.
As Aziz said, ISIS said, "You're not Muslim, get out of the caliphate. You're not one of us." And then he arrives in Germany, and then suddenly he's labeled as a terrorist. There's many reasons that the scene's in the film, but part of it is that Aziz has this fire burning inside of him. And even in the streets of Berlin, he's continuing to fight for what he believes in.
Because this is a proxy war, it seems so intractable. You and your colleagues are in enormous danger, presumably for the rest of your lives. It makes me wonder whether the sacrifice has been worth it.
100%. For us, all of us, we're a group of young friends. Our ages are between 18 and 28. And we were able to make a change in the international community, international media. And when we see ISIS are targeting us because we are affecting them, we know that we are winning somehow. We feel that we've done like a victory for our country, for our city, and we were able like to have a heard voice everywhere. And I'm sure the history will talk about us.
I wish you and your colleagues nothing but the best.
Thank you.
Abdel Aziz Al-Hamza is a co-founder and spokesman for Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently. Matthew Heineman is the director of City of Ghosts, a new documentary about the citizen journalist group, Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently.
Can I say one thing that you can feel free to throw in the trash can?
Sure.
I think, you know, I made this film for many, many reasons, but partly, you know, it's an homage to journalism in this world where truth seems to be malleable. I think it's so important to seek out and celebrate individuals who are risking their lives for the truth. And I can't think of a much better example than the members of Raqqa's being slaughtered silently, who've literally risked everything to shed light on this dark corner of the world. I think it's really important to recognize the amazing work of citizen journalists really all around the world who are filling a void where traditional media has been unable either to go there or doesn't have the resources to be there.
Abdulaziz Alhamza is co-founder and spokesman for Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently. Matthew Heineman is the director of City of Ghosts, a documentary about the citizen journalist group Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently. We spoke shortly after the film's release over the summer. As Arab and Kurdish forces stamped out the last ISIS militants from their strongholds in Raqqa, a parallel operation in Mosul, Iraq, brought bittersweet news in July.
The Iraqi government has announced its forces have finally taken full control of Mosul, the city held by so-called Islamic State extremists for the past 3 years.
They're jubilant in Mosul. They've driven the extremists out. But it's come at a price. After 9 months of fighting, the city lies in ruins.
Many of the tens of thousands of civilians trapped by the fighting with little food or water are now trying to flee to safety.
And it got worse from there. Days later, the media got hold of a video depicting brutal acts of retribution against suspected ISIS members.
The latest shows what appear to be Iraqi soldiers throwing a suspect over a cliff and then shooting at his motionless body.
As some of the 600,000 displaced citizens return home, residents have been told to mind booby traps and hidden mines strewn about the city. So the people of Mosul are not yet free of terror. But now at least its citizens can savor basic freedoms like listening to the radio.
She's saying congratulating to the people of Mosul, to all of us, to the Iraqi security forces, of the victory of liberating Mosul. She's also greetings Al Ghad radio station. Her name is Umnur.
This is one of the countless devoted listeners who call into Radio Al Ghad, a community radio station that defied the media blackout and broadcast to the besieged city during the darkest days of ISIS occupation.
In June 2014, what we've never expected happened. One day we were forced to leave Mosul without being able to get our belongings from the city.
That's Mohammed Al-Mosali, Radio Al Ghad's founder. He and Brooke spoke shortly after the city gained its freedom this summer. Mohammed and his 24-person staff of journalists, DJs, and scholars still use fake names and operate the station in a secret location some 60 miles from the city. Mohammed told us that when Mosul fell to ISIS, or Daesh, 3 years ago, he created the station to fight the Islamic State's devastatingly effective propaganda.
Media was their weapon. The first thing they established is their radio station. People in Mosul were completely isolated by Daesh, not allowing people to have access to cell phones or to the internet or satellite TVs at their homes. People only have Daesh media. And somehow the Iraqi media message was aligned with Daesh message, showing people of Mosul to be supporters of Daesh. This is why it was very important to counter that message and to show the truth and to make sure that the voice of the people inside the city, inside Mosul, will be delivered to the rest of the world. And this is what we did.
We've been hurted by Daesh. They stopped our lives. They stopped us from going to complete our education. And we are left with no future. We are living in a prison.
From the first week we started the broadcasting, Daesh start jamming our frequency. We had to change the frequency, and then after 1 week, they did jam us again. And then they become even faster. In 1 day, they jam us again. And then it becomes 2 hours takes them to jam the new frequency. For this reason, we had to install more transmitters to make sure we are broadcasting on many frequencies simultaneously and to make sure people know that we are there and they just have to look for us.
Now, one way that you fought back against ISIS propaganda was with a program you did called Daesh in the scale of Islam and civilization. And this was a talk show intended for ISIS supporters. I think that may be a first for any media outlet based in Iraq that wasn't produced by ISIS. What was the show about?
That program was presented by a scholar who has a PhD in Islamic theories. He speaks the language that Daesh would speak, highlighting the biggest vulnerabilities within the Daesh argument and make sure people have both sides.
He pointed to actions of ISIS, right? Destroying historical places or mosques, forcing minorities to leave. He was saying that the behavior of ISIS was inconsistent with its religious preachings?
Yes, that was exactly what was the program about. We even asked Daesh to call the radio station and we promised them that we are not stopping their calls. And some of them, they tried to have that live debate, which I think is quite neat. The ISIS members said, you don't have the respect to the Islamic State. The Islamic State is staying and expanding. It will be all over the Arabic countries, and we'll take these countries to be part of our Islamic State while you're looking. Most of the scholars were avoiding these topics in public, and this is why I felt we are quite responsible to give the people an alternative and make sure they have access to information that they need in that critical time.
Did it have any impact, do you think?
Yes, it had a big impact. And after the liberation, we started getting some calls from people who were deceived and they were very thankful to the presenter because they said, we've used to listen to every single episode. Some of those people quit joining Daesh and they had a lot of people to witness what they call like repentance from what they did.
Over the last 9 months, Iraq's campaign to take back the city intensified. Your station acted as an intermediary between the people of Mosul and Iraq's armed forces.
There was a lot of misunderstanding from both parties. For example, when Iraqi people were accused to be supporters of Daesh, Daesh used that point to tell the people by the time the Iraqi security forces will enter Mosul, they will take your women, your kids, they will kill you all. But at the same time, Iraqi soldiers had different opinion about people of Mosul. So having both talking and for the Iraqi soldiers saying we are ready to sacrifice our lives to liberate you, that was a very important and emotional message that reached both sides. That was not possible without the radio station.
Didn't you also get pretty granular in your reports during the liberation of the western part of the city?
We were coordinating with the civil defense to say there are people who are hostages in an area or people who were struck and they are still alive, they are underground, they need urgent help.
Hello.
أسمعك يوم تفضلي.
A woman calling Al-Ghad radio and saying, my brother's daughter with her family are all in Mosul, their house being struck. All her and her family with a newborn kid, they're all underground and we need someone to help them. We don't have anyone except you. Please help. Sometimes the information is not completed by a person describing a house in a neighborhood because he doesn't know the coordinates of the house, and we try all our best to find that information and pass it directly to the civil defense. To be honest, like, one of the things I feel most proud of is saving people's lives. Whatever I'm going to do in the future, I would not be able to do something more human than this.
Mohammed, Mosul was the largest city held by the Islamic State. Even before Iraqi forces officially took it, Prime Minister al-Abadi announced the end of ISIS's caliphate. Do you think it's premature to do that?
It's quite a big achievement, but there are still some areas in Iraq like Tal Afar and Hawija. So Iraq is not fully liberated. And of course, Daesh would try to re-establish their network in a different way. And today, even though Mosul is liberated, there are a lot of sleeping cells living among civilians in the east part of Mosul.
So as the residents of Mosul and the Iraqi government, which didn't serve the city all that well in the past, start the process of rebuilding, what do you see as Radio Al-Ghad's new role?
I want to make sure the Iraqi government knows what the people feel, and I don't want to have a lot of filtration process in the middle where the reality is not being delivered to the officials. We want to give the people a voice where they can speak freely about their problems so they can be part of the change instead of waiting for someone to change their lives, to make sure my people will not fall into the same trap again.
Mohammed Al-Mosli is the founder of Radio Al-Ghad, a community radio station broadcasting to Mosul, Iraq. Mohammed, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You also have a talent show, right?
Yeah, the talent show started when 70% of the east part of Mosul was liberated. And it was the first live talent show in radios in Iraq.
Did they just sing on the phone?
Yeah, it's a lot of them, they just start singing on the phone. And then it went through different stages. But at the end, we send reporters to Mosul to record to those people. And this week, we've published their first production about the liberation of Mosul. And that was from the top three who won the talent show.
Brooks spoke with Mohammed Al-Mosli back in July. Radio Al-Ghad is still on air and reporting on the city's rebuilding efforts. Thanks for listening. If you're yearning for more OTM, might I suggest signing up for our weekly newsletter? It's useful because it will tell you what's coming up on that week's show, but it's also wacky as all hell. Go to onthemedia.org and sign up today. I'm Bob Garfield.